Long Beach made a decision to become a great bike city, a political decision about 3 years ago. They went about raising $12 million over 2 years in money from outside Long Beach in the form of grants from the state and federal government. And then they started looking for somebody like me to help them invest that money. And so since I got here, we've raised an additional $8 million, and so it's at 20, and we're investing that money into national pilot projects, into bread and butter bike lanes, into bicycle education for kids and adults.
Wow, how far would $20 million go in your community in terms of improving safety for cyclists? Probably go a long way. Well, that's my guest today. So excited to have him on the show, Charlie Gandy, Mobility Coordinator of Long Beach. Charlie, I want to give his company a plug, Livable Communities Consulting, an urban design and planning operation. Long Beach, arguably the city with the most to show for improving bike safety in the Southland here. And it's all because of, really, probably, Charlie would argue, I can tell, but one project in Belmont Shore, and we're going to talk about that extensively. And you're listening to, well, it's so easy for me to say, the Frank Peters Show, huh? Well, there's some correlation. I'm Frank Peters. This is my new blog. I call it cdmcyclist.com. And I've been doing interviews with interesting people for the past 5 years. Then just quite recently, a new friend pointed me in the direction of Charlie Gandy. I'm a former member of a bike safety task force here in Newport Beach. And as we started looking at what could we do to improve bike safety in our community, Charlie's reputation and what the city of Long Beach had accomplished, well, that came up on the radar pretty quickly. So today, that's what we're going to talk about. We're going to get into all of that. Well, I misspeak. Not all of it, because there's so much to talk about. I broke this show into two parts, and we'll talk more about that later. But there'll be a second interview with Charlie coming along in the weeks to follow. Hey, I'd like to plug my sponsors. Couldn't do the show without them. Pedego Electric Bikes, based in Irvine, designs and manufactures comfortable electric bikes. You can pedal them, or you can put it on electric. Could get to work without getting in a big sweat. Fun and recreational exercise. For more information, go to Pedego, P-E-D-E-G-O.com. And you'll see on the blog, cdmcyclist.com, you'll see Pedego just announced a new deal with Tommy Bahamas and the beautiful electric bikes that Tommy has branded through Pedego. Check it out, please. Pedego.com. And then a special thank you to BikeTiresDirect.com, an online store for all your bicycle equipment needs. And as the name implies, it started with tires. And that's a great story. I'm going to have to get my friends at Bike Tires Direct to tell that story. And I'm headed to Portland this week. I'm going to be visiting BikeTiresDirect.com. They have everything from tires to gear to clothing, everything you're going to need to equip your bikes for safe riding. BikeTiresDirect.com. They've also got a buyer rewards program, which I get a kick out of. It's kind of addicting. I've got some credits. They give you a few credits every time you shop there. So the next time you visit, doesn't cost as much. BikeTiresDirect.com. Check them out, please. Well, Charlie Gandy, we're going to get into Sharrow's traffic circles, all the great work that he's done in the city of Long Beach. Let's listen. Charlie, you're probably famous for many things, but I got to know you because of the Sharrows and Belmont Shore.
Right.
Do a lot of people say that?
They don't say they got to know me that way. They either tell me they love me or they hate me because of the Green Lane and Belmont Shore.
I can picture that.
People have an opinion on it, yeah, you know, and they're usually not shy about sharing.
Right, right. Well, you're an amateur pollster then, maybe. How does it come down? More favorable than not, or?
You know, I would say, first of all, I haven't done a poll to determine that.
Yeah.
And my view, of course, is that of an advocate and an urban planner that's looking to use the space efficiently. And I'd say we have a winner on our hands. We've doubled the number of cyclists using that route. We've kept the crash rate between cars and bikes at the same as it was the previous years. And all those are minor. They're bicyclists hitting the back of cars that are trying to parallel park in and relatively minor, you know, occurrences. And so, yeah, we've moved cyclists off the sidewalk into the street to, because that's the original purpose of this, is to get cyclists off the sidewalk.
Right. I remember that in some of the literature, and I hadn't thought of that at first, but that was a deliberate...
Oh, in direct response to the business association saying, we've got too many cyclists on the sidewalk. Mm-hmm. And so that's really the reason that we do a lot of this stuff, is to solve some problem. And that's what we've done there, is migrated bicyclists out onto the street.
Mm-hmm.
And so, made it a much more attractive place to ride a bike.
Yeah, much more attractive. Now, I hear a lot from people talking about the Sharrows. Anyway, I knew, or I thought, we'd start with this anyway, because that's how I first learned of Long Beach and its initiatives, and that led to meeting you, is the green paint on the street. That was a daring move, really dramatic. You must have had that added to some of the persuasive challenges that you faced.
Yes, that was a bold statement of the existing law. That's what's interesting about it, is we didn't change the law, or the law didn't change. All we're doing with that green stripe is articulating that in this case, where there's not enough room for bicyclists to move to the right, to yield to motorists, we're supposed to share the road. We know from safety statistics that's the much smarter place to be than on the sidewalk or in the door zone. And in that particular stretch of a very successful retail district, the progression speed of motors going through there is only about 6 miles per hour. And so we don't have a conflict with speed between
that's
motors and bicycles.
That's much lower than I would have guessed.
Well, think about
it. At times of day, I suppose.
No, it has to do with the timing of the lights. There are, in that 17-block range, there are 15 traffic signals. And the business district dominates, rightly so, that area, and they could have timed those for 30 miles per hour, and that would have killed business along each side. But by making it function more like a parking lot than a high-speed throughfare, it provides the opportunity to sip on a $4 latte on the sidewalk or buy a meal at and sit and in a intimate, safe environment. And so that's the reason why that's a good application in Belmont Shore.
And that was like all set up for you? You didn't have to deal with the timing of the lights?
No, that's what showed us that might be a good place to test this application.
Yeah, great.
Great. Oh, I didn't think of that as...
Oh, yeah. So here's one of our... In my business, I coach business districts and I coach cities. And for a business district to thrive, the public space needs to function well and to benefit them. I can show you plenty of examples where, because the traffic is moving so fast, it's dangerous to parallel park, it's dangerous to make a right turn or a left turn, therefore people don't try. And the businesses suffer as a consequence on either side.
They do. They do. So I'll probably do it a few times. I'll just drift off into life in Corona Del Mar, my neighborhood.
Yeah.
You know, from the 10,000-foot level, looks just like Belmont Shore.
Mm-hmm.
But the Coast Highway traffic, we don't have enough traffic lights, I guess, is what I'm determining. Huh?
Potentially. Or the timing of those lights is not conducive to cars moving through at a safe, respectful speed.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, one of the tools we have is traffic progression speeds to manage traffic at the speed we want them to move, and traffic lights are a part of that.
Now, might be more challenging tweaking that on Coast Highway.
Oh, absolutely. That would be a harder application there. It may not be appropriate at all. I don't know.
Right.
When we have, you know, bicyclists we tend to use 15 miles per hour as a planning speed for cyclists. But where it's designed for cars to move at 30 or 40 miles per hour, that's what sets up the conflicts, and that's why then we need to separate and provide a bike lane.
Right.
And then in those congested places, such as through Laguna Beach, Sharrows are, we know we have to share the space, and traffic's not moving through there most of the time very fast anyway, just because of the volume of traffic. And so in that case, it works well. Where it breaks down, of course, is where cars are actually moving at 40 miles per hour.
So that was a big project. How long ago did you implement the Sharrows?
We installed that in June of 2009, and so we've had 1 year's worth of experience now.
Great.
We did counts beforehand, and we had roughly 400 a day bicyclists moving through that area. And by the way, and about 35 to 40,000 cars a day moving through that area. We put that green lane in, and within a year, we've doubled the number of bicyclists there. There's now 800 a day moving through that area. And those are customers. Most of them are very local and weren't riding their bikes before because they weren't supposed to ride them on the sidewalks and they didn't feel comfortable riding them in the street.
Right. So the merchants have to be happy with that.
There are merchants that have bought bicycles to use as delivery tools now. There are merchants that are asking us to put bike corrals in front of their place so that their customers can have rock star parking in front of their coffee shop. Or the Belmont Shore Athletic Club is getting a 14 bike corral in front of their place. Why? Not because of it's because they can get 14 customers where they had one before in a car.
Yeah.
And so this is the evolution of the place and a more efficient use of the space and a realization that they can get more customers into their district by bike or walking than they can by car. And the neighbors don't want them to build more parking capacity.
Right. That's a no-win game, right? Building more parking capacity, you can never have enough.
Well, it's the most efficient way to not grow. And the inverse is true. Now Belmont Shore is a good example of where they reach from far beyond a mile. However, if you can change the habits of those that live within a mile, so they're not taking up car parking spaces, but they're riding their bikes or walking down there, that frees up a space for you from Newport to come up and have a meal.
Good point. Yeah.
And so it's a more efficient use of the space.
So. Cooperative in that regard, then, not a hardship for motorists.
We're trying to reach out to those people in Newport.
Wow. Well, I've spent more time in Belmont Shore in the past year than I have in the past few.
That's good news.
Because of the Sharrows, I want to bring people up, and
I do almost weekly tours of people. We had a group from the South Bay come through, and we do delegations. Our mayor, by the way, let me tell you a quick story. Bob Foster's our mayor, and he's a retired Edison president and used to work out in a gym, didn't ride bikes at all, and saw that we were doing this bike thing, and he went out and bought him a $400 hybrid and was kind of in the closet riding this bike and enjoying it, but not feeling real confident. He got with Tony Cruz, our bike ambassador, and started doing some training rides. Then he decided he wanted to lead a fledgling ride called the Tour de Long Beach, a 32-mile loop around the city. Most of it's on trails. And we thought, so this was our first year, we were going to be lucky and thankful if we got 200 people signing up for this thing. But when the mayor got involved and started promoting it, immediately we went to 1,000.
Wow.
And so that was an overnight success. And then the mayor, you know, he's starting to ride with Pat West, our city manager, and others that take this stuff a little more seriously.
Mm-hmm.
2 months ago, he bought a $2,500 road bike and is doing 50 to 100 miles a week now and is a incredible evangelical cyclist.
Mm-hmm.
I said to him on a ride a couple months ago, I said, Mayor, people want to bring their electeds down here and see what's going on. And the mayor said to me, have them bring their candy-ass mayor to Long Beach and we'll show them what a great bike city is all about.
Yeah. Wow, that's great, huh?
So yeah,
that's a great
movement
story.
Here.
So you've got buy-in from the top,
Frank. What we have before I got here is the creation of political will. They made a decision 3 years ago as a city council that this was the direction they wanted to go. They saw what was going on in Portland and Seattle and Denver and New York and other places, and they said, we want to do this. We're not sure how, but we want to move in this direction. And so they put one person on raising the money for that, Sumi Gant. And she's the one that raised that $12 million in the first 2 years and then hired me to help Spend it.
Huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
And let's put a size on Long Beach. Population?
460,000, mm-hmm. 52 square miles. Mm-hmm. Five of that's beachfront. Mm-hmm. And so, and one of the most diverse cities ethnically.
You've got a lot of diversity here.
In the world. Yeah. And economics. We've got very rich people. We have very poor people.
Right. You've got an airport.
And a port that handles about 40% of the
port. Geez, got to mention that. Yeah.
Right. 40% of the goods coming into the
right.
U.S.
Right.
Coming through L.A. and Long Beach ports.
Now, I'm a former Belmont Shore resident.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I don't think I was riding a bike in those days. It was the 80s. Yeah. Yeah. I guess it was my second business. In my basement down on Belmont Shore, first in Corona.
What was it?
I was writing software at the time for Wall Street.
Okay.
For individual. And I was selling the software out of the trunk of my car in downtown Long Beach. All the major brokerage firms were there. Merrill Lynch, Dean Witter, they were all there in the old days. And that's how I started. Wow.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know you were down there.
Then. Yeah.
Well, then you've seen Belmont Shore go through different iterations.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. It's a terrific community.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk a little bit more about making changes in the community related to bicycles. Now, is it a myth or there's some truth to it? Southern California, very addicted to the automobile.
Mm-hmm. Not unlike Austin, Texas, actually, or other Sunbelt
really,
city.
Really, Austin. Austin, it's because of
Lance Armstrong.
That Austin gets like haloed in the bike community. But I've got friends that moved to Austin from Newport Beach just 4 years ago. They won't ride because...
Right. It can be treacherous in places.
Yeah, right. It can be treacherous, yeah.
To your question about what's happening in Long Beach. So this political will came together.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's always the first step, a decision among the leaders, we're going to move in some direction. Mm-hmm. And then putting someone to do that and holding them accountable. And so my job, or our job as the professionals, is to take, and we're harvesting this political will. We're taking that and we're turning that into action.
Mm-hmm.
And we're learning, you know, we don't, all of our steps aren't perfect, as in any innovation, you know, it's fits and starts and learning continuously.
Sure.
But having that audacious goal of being among one of the best bike cities in the nation, if not the world, provides us this momentum, this sort of overall direction. And so I can sit with anybody in the city, I can sit with any neighborhood association and say, you know, we've made a decision, this is the direction we're going to go. Let's see how that works for you. And so it's a presumption that we're moving in this direction, not if, it's how.
Mm-hmm.
And so that gives me and us real leverage with the curmudgeons or those who would be cynical or skeptical.
Not the early adopters, but the slower adopters, prove it first.
Crowd. And it is, and it's backed up by this political will. You know, we don't have obstacles, we have expectations. And every day, we're attempting to live up to Pat West and Bob Foster, and I name off the other nine city council members that are saying, you know, what's in it for me? And they're, when are you going to do that in my district?
Sure.
We put in one bike corral, and now we had planned to do a 3-month test on this, and immediately we have three other council people saying, we want one of those in our districts now.
It makes me think of like the tipping point, the book about the tipping point, where you're kind of over the crest there, and now you've got people like fighting over when do I get my turn at the top.
By the way, this is not unique to Long Beach. I've learned from as a professional from Portland and Seattle primarily, and they went through the same thing. That is, and so to some degree, we're doing in 3 years what it took them 15 to do. Seattle went through this exact same thing. They started putting in traffic calming stuff and bicycle facilities in the progressive neighborhoods, those that wanted to be early adopters, and they invited others to come in and take a look.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a popular thing that took on a life of its own, and then that became the norm.
Mm-hmm.
And Long Beach has decided that it wants to differentiate from Los Angeles. It wants to be different than Orange County. It wants to be getting back to a authentic identity as a beach town. The slogan is, let's put the beach back into Long Beach. And that is, instead of trying to be a miniature Los Angeles, let's be more like Manhattan Beach. And where a beach cruiser is a smart mode of transportation.
Right.
And so, that's a marketing strategy for a city, right? Mm-hmm. That's different from where it's been in the past. That's a part of our new winning formula. We call it OLA, O-L-A, optimism, localism, authenticity.
I like the authenticity part of that.
Oh, yeah. We're very much in the business of, frankly, it's getting away from the Disneyfication of where Long Beach has been in the past and where other cities in this part of the world have been in the past, mm-hmm. and that is trying to be something in sort of a superficial way.
Would the Spruce Goose kind of be part of that, you know?
Maybe, although, that's kind of an interesting story.
Yeah.
It has more to do with replicating things that used to be here, and such as at the Pike. The Pike used to be a rough and tumble, maybe when you lived here, you saw it. And all that got scraped to the ground, and now there's a new Pike, but it's a sterile Pike. It's a Pike that doesn't have the sort of maybe integrity or authenticity that...
And the Pike used to be like roller coasters and carnival.
More of a Coney Island thing.
Coney Island, right.
Right. And those, so they've replicated some of that stuff, but it doesn't hold together mm-hmm. as the original did. Mm-hmm. And so those are lessons learned mm-hmm. Part of the story here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great. So you mentioned traffic calming a few minutes ago, Charlie. For those that might not be familiar, how would you define traffic calming?
Well, it's using tools that we have in our tool chest now beyond stop signs and speed humps mm-hmm. to slow people down and to make induce them to move through a neighborhood at a safe, respectful speed. And traffic circles, small traffic circles are an example
of
that.
That would be a good example,
One of our three national projects is doing the first bike boulevard in Southern California along Vista, a neighborhood street over in Belmont Heights.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's eight traffic circles where there used to be stop signs along that route, or no stop signs at all, north-south. Mm-hmm. And so we sold that on two things. One is it's great for bikes, and two, it's great for traffic calming. And if we did a poll on that, we'd have probably found that we had more support for slowing down cars than privileging bikes.
Right.
And that's okay with me.
Residents.
Well, their biggest problem at Park and Vista was drunks at night flying up that intersection and hitting, T-boning somebody as they came off a side street mm-hmm. and didn't see him.
Right.
And so what we do is traffic circles just virtually eliminate that kind of crash.
Right. And I've heard, too, a few years ago that traffic circles have fewer accidents because as drivers approach, they know they've got to pay more attention.
Right, and so they slow down. Yeah, you still have an occasional fender bender, but you don't have that T-bone crash that that we have at four-way stops,
right.
where somebody doesn't see the stop mm-hmm. or is too drunk to see it. Mm-hmm. By the way, in Seattle, the police refer to traffic circles as DUI checkpoints because at night the drunks don't see them and they hit them and that 6-inch curb deflates the left front tire and they stop going someplace.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, that's why Seattle's put in over 1,000 of them mm-hmm. and others.
Oh, really?
It's a very effective tool. They're not expensive and they serve that purpose. And then of course, from both a motorist and a bicyclist perspective, when you move through that intersection now, you slow down, move through, and continue on unless you need to yield for somebody. And so by doing that, you don't have you didn't put a stop sign there. You did something that's actually, for those of us that would move through at a safe, respectful speed, a no-hassle intersection.
Right.
And from a cyclist point of view, you don't have to stop.
Right. Oh, lots of great features. Now, back to implementing the Sharrows.
Yeah.
Because Long Beach, so close to the ocean, did you have to deal with the Coastal Commission? Anything?
No. That project I'm just describing is three blocks outside the Coastal Commission territory. Mm-hmm. The green lane is straightforward aviation paint. You'll see that same color green at LAX. Oh. And so it's, and it, it, that whole thing, by the way, cost us $10,000. And
boy, that has to be a fantastic yield, huh?
It's well, and what we were surprised about is that that bought us two coats. We did the original coat a year ago and only used half the paint, and ended up coming back a year later and putting the second coat down just to clean it up for our anniversary.
That tickles.
So that is a very cost-effective way to communicate. See. Beyond inviting bicyclists to use the street, we're also communicating to motorists that this is a place to share the street. It's something different. And as in any new traffic device, we have initial confusion. And that's okay. When we as motorists are confused, we tend to slow down and pay attention, going through detours or anything else that's new. And so we had that experience for the first month or so on Belmont Shore. We had lots of people anxious about this concept of sharing the street with cyclists.
Right.
But so we gradually move from a fear-based anxiety to, because we did counts halfway through to support our evidence-based argument that, no, this is a safe way to go about doing this. Mm-hmm. And it maybe is counterintuitive to you, but, you know, we've learned lessons from other parts of the country as well as Europe, and we're simply applying those lessons here.
That's a big advantage. We've talked about that in emails, isn't it? That there's a lot you can learn pretty inexpensively from other cities.
And countries.
And countries,
right. And that's not to say that everything is applicable, but in many cases they are.
Yeah.
And this is a city that is a car-oriented city because of the period that it was built. Joel Giroux in the early 90s wrote a book about edge cities, and he presented the concept, the first time I ever saw it, of cities evolving around their state-of-the-art transportation system. He said when mules and walking were the primary source, you got Jerusalem. When trade happened by sailing ships, you got coastal cities in Europe and Boston.
And New York.
Right. And when you got when trains became a dominant source, you got Chicago. And you can look at look at the train routes out of the city, and you'll see where the density is in that city.
Right.
And then when cars came along, you got Sunbelt cities and Los Angeles.
Right.
But this was in the early 90s. And by the way, airplanes play a role in that growth as well. But he said, you know what the next transportation system is? He held up a piece of paper and he said, I can drop this paper into this fax machine and have it come out anywhere in the world. This was the early 90s and before internet. And he said, this is transportation, the next model of transportation, and that is digital or electronics.
Mm-hmm.
And he's right, you know, and you know the story on that.
Sure.
So anyway, the point here is that, now with the internet, you can live in Newport. And in fact, the broader lesson is you can live. Geography is meaningless in many
In an information economy. Right.
Yeah, not completely.
Right.
There's still value in face to face.
Well, like I drove up here today.
There you go.
Half an hour.
And it would have been a different experience if we had done this electronically.
Right. Yeah, it would have been.
And so that's there's no absolute in it, but it has changed transportation patterns as a consequence of technology.
Mm-hmm. So I suppose that's favorable, right? That's going to add momentum to this as people.
Well, then see what happens is you can have Adobe software moved 400 well-paid engineers to a building in Seattle because those engineers wanted to ride their bikes on the Burt Gilman Trail to and from work.
Oh, wow!
And so when you have collaborative businesses now, and you have people that are very mobile, then you need to please them, right? And if they want to carry on an active, healthy lifestyle, they're going to move to a place that supports them.
Right.
And that's the reason why.
You make valuable talent, so you want to keep them happy, and it's probably not that expensive to do so. pay for it with reductions in your health care benefits.
Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah. And paint, yeah, 11 cents a foot to put a stripe on a street.
Right.
That's the, those are the symbols, as I was mentioning to you earlier. That's what, that's how Austin sold itself as a lifestyle city in the early 90s. They were pitching quality of life and showing that in bicycle and running trails. That's
good for them. Good for them.
Anyway, so yes, that's what Long Beach is up to.
We're back in the studio, and as I hinted at before, there's a lot more that Charlie and I cover. We're really only halfway through the interview. I had a lot of questions for Charlie, but we'll save that for another time, coming up real soon here on cdmcyclist.com. Please come to the website. I'd love to hear from you. You could leave a comment on today's show, your thoughts on cycling safety, what's going on in your community. I'd love to hear from you. While you're on the website, you'll see last week's interview with Nicole Friedman. She runs Boston Bikes for Mayor Menino in the city of Boston. And next week, I have Cheryl Schmidt, Transportation Coordinator for City of Santa Cruz, California. And a delightful interview there as well. I'm enjoying getting to know these experts in the field of bicycle safety and improving city streets, so I hope you'll join me, tell your friends, and come right back. I'd love to hear from you. Come to the blog, cdmcyclist.com. Thanks so much for listening, and good day.